Welcome to episode 210 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. This show was recorded the week of January 27th, 2014. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA, where you'll find a fantastic selection of complete bikes, components, accessories, apparel, nutrition, and more, all at phenomenal prices with unparalleled customer service. When you need anything for cycling, simply go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And by Fazari Performance Bicycles, where they design and build high-performance road and mountain bikes using the most advanced design techniques, materials, and components. And they sell it all manufacturer direct for huge savings and provide you with a custom fit to ensure comfort, performance, and satisfaction. Go to Fazari.com, that's F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I.com, to learn more. And now also by Lynda.com, that's Lynda.com/Fredcast. Lynda.com will help anyone learn software, creative, and business skills to achieve personal and professional goals with their incredible library of classes and tutorials on a wide variety of subjects. Get a 7-day free trial simply by going to Lynda.com/Fredcast. Now, sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you back here with us. Lots to talk about this week, and we will get into it in just a moment. But first, it's time to thank our devoted and loyal sponsor, Jensen USA, at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Jensen's back in 2014 sponsoring the show. We're very appreciative, and that means that you love them. You really, really love them, because what you've learned is that when you go to Jensen USA, you can find an incredible selection of products for mountain biking, road biking, and everything in between at great prices with truly unparalleled customer service. I noticed that Jensen USA right now is having an incredible sale on 2012 and 2013 brand new Focus bikes, mountain bikes and road bikes, some of them up to 68% off the manufacturer's suggested retail price. That's just simply incredible. Go ahead and check them out because they've got a lot more than just complete bikes. They've got components and apparel and accessories, anything you need to outfit your next bike ride, you will find at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Oh, and by the way, have you ever dreamed of a job in the bicycle industry? Check out jensenusa.com/jobs. They've got a number of jobs that they're trying to fill right now. Chances are you might fit one of them. So go ahead and check them out. We have to thank Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast, and thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Hey, real quick, before we get into the news today, I just wanted to say thank you to all of you who sent emails and voicemails encouraging me following my injury, which I told you about on the last episode. Healing quite nicely, thank you. I am walking without crutches, and the only time I'm using a cane is when I'm outside, mainly just to sort of warn people, and also just in case I should lose my balance. Last thing I need is to break my ankle again. And yesterday, because I'm now recording this intro on Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Boy, so much going on today, plus cyclocross worlds. Anyway, yesterday I was actually able to get back on my bike, on my CompuTrainer, and actually ride a real bike for the first time since my injury. So again, there's your update. Things are improving. I am healing. And really, thank you so much for your concern. It's very, very much appreciated. Well, topping the news this week is a follow-up to a story that we did on a recent episode of the Fredcast. You'll recall the case of cyclist Milton Everett Olin Jr., the 65-year-old entertainment attorney who was riding his bike on Mulholland Highway in Calabasas in early December when he was struck by a Los Angeles County Sheriff deputy on duty driving his car. And as a result of the collision, the attorney and cyclist was killed. You'll also recall that Mr. Olin is a former executive from the music sharing website Napster and also a former executive of A&M Records. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's investigators have been looking into this case. They've completed a portion of their investigation and have determined that they will indeed be referring this case to the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office. Now, there are not a lot of details as to what their investigation showed, but apparently included in their investigation are the records from the deputy's MDT, mobile data terminal. Those are the little computers that you see law enforcement officers referring to as they're going about their business during the day. So the question is whether or not Deputy Andrew Wood, who was the driver in this case, whether or not he was potentially distracted by something on his MDT, whether he was distracted by perhaps a radio call, or whether they're looking at there's a curve in the road. And it sounds like just after that curve in the road, there's a curb that juts out into the road, and that perhaps because of the curve and then the jutting out of the curb, and then of course the cyclist then having to move over toward the left, closer into the deputy's traffic lane, whether or not that may have also contributed to the accident. Now, what's interesting is since the accident occurred, Deputy Wood has been transferred to the Sheriff's Department's Court Services Division. Now, according to the Sheriff's Department, they say that the deputy made that request for the transfer more than a year ago. Coincidental, of course, the deputy has been transferred off of traffic patrol onto court services. I'm sure that there will be a lot more coming out about this case in the near future. And of course, I'll bring it to you here on the Fredcast, but I wanted to give you that update right at the top of the show because I know that there was a lot of concern about this when it was first reported. While we're on the topic of safe passage of cyclists, it looks like the state of Virginia is now looking very seriously at a cyclist safe passing bill. Senate Bill 97 was introduced by Senator Bryce Reeves. He's a Republican from the city of Fredericksburg, Virginia. Now, Reeves has introduced similar bills in the past, but they have failed basically because a number of legislators in the state of Virginia have said that they're concerned about enforceability issues. The good news in this case, however, is that Senate Bill 97 has now passed the Virginia State Senate and is now being considered by the Virginia State House of Representatives. Really good news. Now, as I believe you know, there are 22 other states in the United States, as well as Washington, D.C., that have similar laws saying that drivers have to pass cyclists with at least 3 feet of room. Now, interestingly, we did an episode of The Spokesman this weekend, and Jim Moss, attorney Jim Moss from recreationlaw.com, mentioned the fact that he was riding his bike on a vacation recently over the holidays in the state of Florida. His contention was that having ridden in Florida before the passage of a 3-foot law and now riding in Florida after the passage of a 3-foot law, he definitely sees a difference in the way that cars treated him on the road. So hopefully those of you in Virginia will be able to soon have that limited legal protection, and hopefully drivers will start giving you a wider berth. For those of you who are interested, I have placed a link in the show notes to where you can follow the bill, but I'd encourage you, if you live in the state of Virginia, now is the time to talk to your legislators and your governor to make sure that this bill passes once and for all in your state. Here in the United States, if you want to take a bicycle tour, one of the places that many people will recommend to you is the wine country of Northern California, Sonoma Valley, Napa Valley, etc. Well, recently, a crime occurred in the Napa County area that has local cycling advocates, cyclists, and law enforcement officials quite upset. In a bike lane on the Silverado Trail, there was a painting, as there generally is in bike lanes, of a man or a person riding a bicycle. Beneath that, someone spray painted the words roadkill, and they did it in a way that appeared that they were looking to replicate their graffiti in multiple places because they used a stencil and then spray painted through the stencil. Again, the words roadkill. Local Napa County Bicycle Coalition Executive Director Mike Constanzo said, quote, "This is not a joke. I thought long and hard before using the term hate crime," unquote, he said. Now, for his part, his counterpart, Gary Helfrich at the Sonoma County Bicycle Coalition said, quote, "That's really out of control. That borders on hate speech, unquote. One of the issues here is that a lot of the members of this community, the cycling members of this community, have experienced road rage on the part of motorists in the area. Now, whether these are local residents or whether these are visitors to one of the perhaps most popular areas to visit in Northern California is unknown. Nevertheless, when you add up the road rage and the harassment that the cyclists in the community have gotten from motorists and the words roadkill in the bike lane, you can imagine how this has enraged, upset, and concerned the local community. Thankfully, the local Napa County Sheriff's Office is taking this seriously and is looking for tips to try to find out who may have done this cowardly act. For their part, the Napa County Public Works Department was swift in painting over the words and making sure that they were not seen. As a matter of fact, it sounded like they were painted over within about 24 hours. Now, if you live in the area and if there's any possibility that you might have any information about what has been called this hate crime, please contact the Napa County Sheriff's Department. Their toll-free number is 877-426-4847, 877-426-4847, or send an email to sherifftipline@countyofnapa.org. One of the biggest stories of the holiday shopping season here in the United States was the story about Target stores and the huge hack and data breach that exposed the data, including financial information, of millions of Target shoppers. Well, it appears that a data hack has also hit the sporting industry, including a company that all of us who are cyclists are very familiar with. According to the Wall Street Journal, Easton Bell Sports reported that data from about 6,000 online shoppers was stolen during December 2013, adding Easton Bell to the list of companies whose data has been exposed to hackers. For those of you who may have shopped online with Easton Bell, apparently the data that was stolen was for customers who shopped online with the company between December 1st and December 31st, 2013. And the stolen data may have included names, addresses, credit card numbers, and the CVV number, the three-digit or four-digit security code that is associated with credit cards here in the United States. Similar to the hack that occurred at Target stores, Easton Bell is reporting that the hack was possible because of malicious software that found its way onto Easton Bell servers. The servers have now been shut down, and they've hired a security firm to investigate and, of course, to clear their servers of the malicious software. Just like Target and Neiman Marcus, Easton Bell is offering credit repair and monitoring service to online shoppers whose data may have been stolen. If you'd like more information, I've put a link to the Wall Street Journal article as well as to the Easton Bell website where you can get more information about contacting the company should you be concerned that your data may have been stolen. Without much fanfare, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development recently released a new report that looks at cycling in the world's more developed nations. Now, if you're not familiar with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, they say that their mission, reading from their website, is to promote policies that will improve the economic and social well-being of people all around the world. And they do a lot of this by doing research and then providing governments with advice, depending on what the research says and how to implement policies that, again, would better the economic and social well-being of people in these countries. Now, the 34 countries that make up the membership include Australia, Austria, Belgium, Canada, Chile, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Iceland, Ireland, Israel, Italy, Japan, Korea, Luxembourg, Mexico, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Slovak Republic, Slovenia, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, Turkey, the United Kingdom, and yes, the United States. Well, the recent report that they released looked at cycling and the relative dangers associated with it and came up with some suggestions that governments could implement to make cycling in cities and indeed in rural areas as well, more safe for their citizens. But they found some very interesting things. By the way, there is a link, of course, in the show notes to the report. And as long as you don't click on the PDF icon, you can actually read the entire report online. It's quite interesting. And I don't think that you will find very many, as cyclists, I don't believe that you'll find very many of their conclusions too surprising. Except one of the things that I found the most interesting is the fact that they noted that Americans as a whole, on a per capita basis, are among the world's least avid cyclists. Fewer Americans cycle, and of those Americans cycle, they're essentially riding fewer total miles. Meanwhile, despite the fact that we are among the most, the least avid cyclists, we are also among the most likely to get injured or killed out there on the road. That indeed is scary. And so for those of you who are in bike advocacy, I would strongly suggest that you grab a copy of this report, study it, and find perhaps the top five implementation strategies that they suggest in the report and bring those up at your next coalition meeting, at your next meeting with a legislator, so that you can start implementing some of this well-researched data and implementing it in your own community. A couple of interesting things that I thought that I pulled out of the report. First of all, an overwhelming majority of the crashes that occur, these are their words, by the way, in the report, end up occurring in clear, dry weather. 94% in the United States took place under clear, dry weather, and 87% in Europe. Meanwhile, kind of depressingly so, one quarter of cyclists who were killed, on whom they performed a blood alcohol test, had values above the legal limit for drunk driving in the United States, meaning that nearly one quarter of the cyclists who were killed were legally drunk and were operating their vehicles, their bicycles, illegally as a result. That's really depressing, folks. That's something we have to do something about. 36% in the United States, 36% of all fatal bicycle crashes during the period 2005 to 2011 took place in intersections, and 4% in driveways. So as we all kind of know instinctively, we need to be much more careful around intersections. In the United States, for those fatal crashes that involved a bicycle, where they recorded whether or not the cyclist was wearing a helmet, between 2010 and 2011, 27% of those who were killed were wearing helmets. You might be able to draw the conclusion, although it might be false considering the data, you might be able to draw the conclusion that that means that the overwhelming majority were not killed because they were wearing a helmet. But then you would have to ask, well, were they recording helmet use in every single instance? And the report seems to indicate that perhaps they were not. Interestingly, at least in the United States, running red lights, something we've talked about here on the show recently, running red lights is often cited by law enforcement, right? Those who are writing the reports post-mortem, often cited by law enforcement as a contributory factor in fatal and serious bicycle crashes. So just some of the data that I pulled out of the report, it really is very interesting. I would encourage you, again, if you're at all interested in bicycle advocacy, whether you are in the United States or abroad, I'd strongly encourage you to go ahead and click that link, get a copy of the report. Even if you just skim the first, I think it starts on page 17, where they talk about some of their conclusions. It's very, very interesting reading, and it always will provide you with some good information that at least you can use when you get into an argument at that cocktail party with your non-cycling motorist friends. And if that report wasn't depressing enough, here comes another report, this one from Trinity College of Dublin from their Department of Civil, Structural, and Environmental Engineering. This one entitled "The Personal Exposure of Commuters to Air Pollution in the Urban Environment." What scientists did was they studied 32 healthy young cyclists, and what they found was that the heavy breathing that cyclists do when we're commuting or riding our bikes, especially among traffic, causes us to take into our lungs billions of tiny particles of pollution. And that pollution ends up reducing our heart's ability to respond to changes in exertion level while we exercise. And they found that this reduction in the heart's ability to vary its beat is on a par with people who have cardiac disease. The study was quoted as saying, quote, "These findings indicate that exercise while commuting has an influence on inhaled particulate matter associated with acute declines in heart rate variability, especially in pedestrians and cyclists." According to one of the participants in the study, one of the researchers, Marguerite Nyhan, she said that she and her colleagues concluded that cyclists would be best advised to try to find routes that are away from heavy traffic as they're commuting or training, because otherwise, being in traffic will actually end up undermining the results that we would all be expecting to receive through this exercise. Professor Ross Anderson of the UK's UK government's advisory committee on the medical effects of air pollutants was also quoted as saying, "While the health benefits of cycling are likely to be beneficial, the balancing of risks is problematic. Other epidemiological evidence suggests that traffic pollution has lasting health effects." The bottom line here, folks, got to agree with the researcher here from Trinity College in saying, if you are going to commute, you are best, at least for now, until governments find ways to decrease the amount of pollution, a real problem that we have here in Utah, in Salt Lake City, in the winter, when we have the inversion set up and the pollution gets trapped beneath the inversion. Until such time as we're able to get that under control, or better under control, your best bet will be to find routes that are less crowded. That also will be safer for you as well, in order to ensure that you're not breathing in all of these negative particulates. One of the most desolate and unforgiving places here in the United States is known as Death Valley. It straddles California and Nevada out in the Mojave Desert and has recorded some of the highest and lowest temperatures here in the lower 48. Death Valley is also the home to a national park and has traditionally been the site of a number of athletic endurance events, including the Badwater 135-mile Ultra Marathon and the Furnace Creek 508 cycling race, which is a qualifier for the Race Across America. Well, the National Park Service here in the United States recently announced, citing safety concerns for athletes and for the public, that it would halt athletic events in the park for the majority of 2014, while it studies the safety of athletes and whether or not the National Park Service should allow these events to continue in the future. Now, the National Park Service, while they're studying it, has gotten a lot of comments from athletes and from the public. And your comments are also encouraged as well. What they've decided is that they will start taking applications for events that will begin after October 2014, although they will not say yet whether or not those events will be allowed to continue until they complete their study. If you'd like more information about this, or you'd like to participate in the conversation, I have included a link to a Facebook page called Save Sporting Events in Death Valley. Go ahead and check it out and join the conversation. I'll update you as soon as we know more about whether or not athletic events will continue in an area that has seen temperatures as high as 134 degrees Fahrenheit. Imagine how much hydration you would have to do in that kind of heat. Before we move on today, I want to thank another one of our show sponsors, and that's Fazari Performance Bicycles. Fazari is where you are going to get custom, quality, direct. I'm going to take that in reverse order. First, direct. When you buy from Fazari, you are buying directly from the manufacturer. What does that mean for you? That means you are going to get the best possible price on an incredible bicycle, mountain bike or road bike. Quality. Fazari designs, engineers, and manufactures its bicycles to make sure that you are getting the top-of-the-line materials, components, and quality throughout every single one of their bicycles. As they say, all of their bikes are built with performance in mind. And what about custom? Custom is really cool. When you buy a bike from Fazari, you're going to get a custom setup. That means that you will get a bike using Fazari's 23-point process to ensure that your bike fits perfectly right when you take it out of the box when it arrives at your doorstep. Oh, and by the way, not happy with your bike? No problem. With Fazari, you've got a 30-day unconditional guarantee. Don't like the bike? Return it for a full refund. Now, what are you going to get when you buy from Fazari? You're going to get a top-of-the-line bike at an incredible price, so that as opposed to buying from your local dealer, you will be saving hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars off of a similar bike. I ride a Fazari 4A CR5 road bike, well, when I can ride, and it is a phenomenal ride, and the quality has been spectacular, and it fit me from day one. Go ahead and check them out. They're at Fazari.com on the internet, and when you do, and if you buy, please let them know that you heard about it here on the Fredcast. We thank Fazari for supporting the Fredcast, and we thank you for supporting Fazari. If there's one thing that many of you, when you email me, you ask about the most, it's how can I do some of these cool things that I sometimes hear about on the Fredcast, and how can I get some great swag from some of these companies? Blackburn has come up with the answer. Check this out. They are looking for brand ambassadors for 2014, and they're calling them Blackburn Rangers. Here's the cool thing. If you get chosen to be a Blackburn Ranger, you'll be expected to talk about Blackburn products. You'll be expected to post videos and photos and content to social media sites. But here's the really cool stuff. You'll also get to attend what they're calling their Ranger Camp at the 2014 Whiskey Off-Road event in Prescott, Arizona. And you'll also be asked to travel the Pacific Coast or Great Divide cycling route in the summer of 2014. Kind of cool, right? Well, what do you get? You're going to get new and prototype Blackburn gear. You're going to travel to and participate in that Ranger Camp I told you about. You'll appear in Blackburn videos and maybe even ad campaigns and in-store displays. And they'll also give you a small travel stipend to help you complete the route that you end up doing. What do you have to do? Well, you have to complete an essay. You have to send along photos. And as a bonus, they'd love to see a YouTube video from you as well. But here is the catch. You've got to get all of this into Blackburn by February the 15th. Now, I've included a link to their landing page where you'll get all the details that you need to apply to be a Blackburn Ranger. And you'll also be able to watch videos about being a Blackburn Ranger. It's really cool if you ask me. So go ahead, get creative, apply. Oh, and by the way, if you get chosen, make sure you let me know, because I'd love to share what you're doing with your fellow Fredcast listeners. Good luck, Ranger. As a diehard Fred, one of the things that I am also very interested in is consumer electronics. And so therefore, one of the things on my bucket list is to make at least one trip to the International CES, what we used to know as the Consumer Electronics Show, that takes place at the beginning of every January in Las Vegas. It's the place where you go to see the latest gadgets, gizmos, electronics, everything that will someday be in your living room, in your car, and yes, even on your bike in the future. Well, thanks to our friends over at Cyclicious, a couple of things that were noted at this year's CES included a partnership between Trek Bicycles and Samsung, where they showed a Trek bike with a dock for a Galaxy Note 3 smartphone right on the handlebar stem. Coupled with this dock is a dynamo in the front wheel that will help keep your smartphone charged. Great idea. So many of us go to third-party solutions to add our smartphones to our handlebars to pair up with Ant Plus devices, or maybe even to give us directions of where we're going, now here's a great solution not only to securely put your smartphone on your handlebars in a way that's built into the bike, but also to keep it charged at the same time. I'm hoping that we will see more products like this for even more smartphones in the very near future. Another product that would go on your handlebars, also found on the Cyclicious website, was one that was demonstrated by Schwinn. This is what they call their CycleNav smartphone app, and it couples with a device that goes onto your handlebars. The great thing about it is that you won't be distracted looking at a map on your handlebars, because if you want, your smartphone can stay in your jersey pocket or your backpack or wherever you like to carry it, because this little device that goes onto your handlebars helps you with navigation by giving you lights telling you whether you're turning left or turning right, and also with spoken directions. According to Cyclicious, this hardware is going to charge through a standard USB cable, and it will include a small headlight for nighttime riding. Fritz at Cyclicious also says that it will be interoperable with services like Strava and MapMyRide, that the app itself should be available for download now for both iPhone and Android, and the hardware, the gizmo that will go on your handlebars, will be available later in the spring for, get this, under $60 at your local Walmart. Not bad. I still have to get to CES someday. Well, this is the portion of the show that many of you love to hate and many of you just love. As a matter of fact, check out this voicemail I got from a listener specifically about this section of the show.
Hi, my name is Jacob and I'm from Iowa. Thank you for doing the Fredcast. It's a great service that anyone in cycling can enjoy. One of the things I really like is that you talk about product recalls. I go to a lot of bike websites each week and don't see anything about them. Thanks again from Iowa. Hope to see you on RagBri.
Hey, Jacob, thanks so much for your voicemail. And yes, RagBri, something else that's on my bucket list. I really, really appreciate it. All right, yes, as Jacob said, it is time for the product recall section of the show. And the first thing I want to start with is something we've talked about here on the show already, and that is SRAM's recall of their hydraulic brakes. Now, I know we've talked about this on the show, but considering there's about 25,000 units involved, I just wanted to let you know that the official Consumer Product Safety Commission recall notice has come out. I'm not going to read it. Just know that if you've got SRAM hydraulic brakes, please go to the show notes and please click on the link and learn about the recall and get it taken care of. I can't imagine anything more serious than having your brakes on your bike recalled. So please go ahead and check that out. I won't dwell any further on that particular recall. Next up is a recall from Specialized. Specialized is recalling their 2012 Source 11 and Source Expert disc bikes with Supernova switchable dynamo front hubs. The problem here is that the set screws in the front hub of the recalled bikes can loosen, thereby stopping the front wheel from turning, posing a fall hazard to those of you who might be riding that bike. There's only about 173 of these that were recalled. So if you've got a Source 11 or a Source Expert disc bike, please go to my website, www.thefredcast.com. Check out the show notes for show number 210. Click on the link and take the necessary and required actions. And last for this week is a recall from West Marine. Now, West Marine, not usually considered a bicycle dealer in the traditional sense. West Marine is a chain of stores throughout North America that sells products for boating, whether that's lake boating or ocean boating. And if you think about it, a folding bicycle is a perfect product for them to sell, because if you've got a boat, you don't have a lot of space, and a folding bike is a great way to go if you want to take a bike along with you on your boating adventures. Unfortunately, though, West Marine is recalling about 4,600 of their branded folding bikes because there's a possibility of frame breakage. Now, this recall involves two models of folding bikes, the Jetty Express 2 and the Port Runner 2. So if you've got one of these folding bikes from West Marine, please, again, go to the show notes, click on the link, and take the necessary precautions. These were sold at West Marine dealers nationwide and also through their catalog in March 2010 through July 2013 for about $300 or $400. If you've listened to the Fredcast for any length of time, you know that I am bullish, indeed enthusiastic, on bike sharing systems. Having used bike sharing systems in a number of cities around, well, certainly around North America, and the one that I've used the most is in Washington, D.C. And of course, I've also used the one in Montreal. Now, the Canadian company that built that system in Montreal is the one that indeed has built the systems in 16 other places around the world, including Chicago, New York, London, Montreal, and Washington, D.C. It's a company that we know as Bixi, but which is also known by its corporate name, Public Bike System Company, or PBSC. Unfortunately, Bixi, or PBSC, recently filed for bankruptcy protection in Canada. In its filing, Bixi stated that it was almost $50 million in debt. The story, of course, as typical with any financial story, and certainly a bankruptcy, is a bit convoluted. But it seems from everything I've read that the bankruptcy stems from a couple of different issues. First of all, the company is owed several million dollars by places, cities such as New York and Chicago. Should that money come in, of course, that would also help. It's also true that the company is involved in a lawsuit with the company that makes the software that's used to analyze the movement of bikes from one dock to another. And finally, one of the radio reports that I listened to from a local NPR station in Boston, whose system was also put together by Bixi, that report indicated that the city of Montreal, who helped fund PBSC to begin with, was looking for a faster return on its original R&D investment than perhaps many other businesses or many other investors might seek in the case of an R&D situation like BikeShare and like Bixi has put together for BikeShare. Now, the other problem, of course, that people have cited in various news articles is the possibility that the business model of BikeShare may not work fundamentally. While many of us enjoy the benefits of BikeShare, the problem is many of us also know that if we only take our bike, in many cases, for less than 30 minutes, we're not going to be paying anything other than our membership fees for using BikeShare. And as a result, maybe there's not much of a profit model involved in the BikeShare systems. However, Arlington County, Virginia is reported to have recovered about 74% of its operating costs last year, according to a county report. Many people are simply saying it might be that local municipalities and counties and states might need to invest their own tax revenue into the bike share systems as a way of helping to invest in the infrastructure that is needed in their cities, counties, and states. Meanwhile, many cities and municipalities that have been looking to add bike share, one Vancouver is a good example, are now looking at whether or not they want to move forward with Bixi as their supplier to help put together their future systems. For its part, the City of Montreal has said that they will ensure that their bike share system continues to operate in 2014, but has not commented on what will happen beyond that date. A lot will depend on what happens with Bixi's bankruptcy. This is something that I personally will be watching very carefully and will bring you updates as they become available right here on the show. What you're listening to is an entire symphony simply made from the sounds of bicycles and bicycle parts. This symphony was created by an artist by the name of Johnny Random. Johnny Random spent 7 months putting together this symphony that lasts just 3.5 minutes. And he did it entirely by using bicycles and bicycle parts as his instrument. Now, you may be saying, this isn't unique. I remember somebody did that with a tune from the Nutcracker just a couple of... Exactly right. Same exact guy. Johnny Random was originally hired to do that Nutcracker piece by an advertising agency. But for this, he created his own symphony for his own use. And I'd highly encourage you to download it and share it with your friends. It's just one more way to show everybody how beautiful bikes can be and what beauty they can bring to the world. Well, we're about to move on to professional cycling news. And before we do, I want to talk to you about one more sponsor of the show. Over the holidays, as I was sitting recuperating, I wanted to up my training in AutoCAD. It's something I use for my day job, and I wasn't quite sure where I could go, and I stumbled onto a site that I'd never really heard of before called lynda.com. That's L-Y-N-D-A.com. Turns out lynda.com has literally thousands of instructional videos on hundreds of topics, everything from business and finance to, yeah, software. And I thought, all right, I'll give it a try. And I did, and I couldn't believe the quality level of the training. And then I sought out lynda.com and said I wanted to share this with my listeners, and now they're a sponsor of the show. Pick a subject that you want to learn about, and chances are you will find it on lynda.com. You want to learn new business skills, about databases, how to give a better presentation? Do you want to learn about Photoshop or AutoCAD, about how to use your camera? You can find it on lynda.com. And the really cool thing is they're going to give you, as a Fredcast listener, a 7-day free trial of their service. Give it a try. Digest as much as you can in 7 days. I don't think that you'll be disappointed. I know that I wasn't, and I'm not. Go to lynda.com/Fredcast and get your 7-day free trial today. It works with Macs, PCs, tablets, smartphones. Anywhere that you want to learn, you can learn with lynda.com. Check them out, lynda.com. That's lynda.com/Fredcast. Well, let's move on to the part of the show when we normally talk about racing, and I want to start first with a race against the clock. As a matter of fact, a world record-setting race against the clock. Because earlier this week, Frenchman Robert Marchand, a retired firefighter and logger, broke the world record for the one-hour ride, riding 26.927 kilometers. That's just under 17 miles in 1 hour. Come on, you can't do that, right? I mean, 17 miles in wait, you can? Well, hang on a second. So can I. Yeah. But do you think any of us will be able to ride 17 miles in 1 hour when we're 102 years old? Yeah, I didn't think so. Marchand, however, he did. He's 102 years old, and as I said, a retired firefighter and logger, and broke the world record, his own world record, in the over 100s category. Now, by comparison, the one-hour record actually all around is owned by Czech Ondrej Sosenka. He set it in 2005 with a record of 49.7 kilometers. That's 30.882 miles. Marchand, for his part, also holds the record for a rider over the age of 100 riding 100 kilometers. He did that in 4 hours, 17 minutes, and 27 seconds in the year 2012. So, chapeau, Monsieur Marchand, for setting the new world record in the over 100s category. Nice going. Moving on to pro racing, It's kind of incredible to think that the World Tour season has already begun for 2014. And I've kind of dialed back on the pro racing coverage here on the Fredcast, I do think that the first Pro Tour event of the season does merit some attention. And of course, as has been for the last few years, the first World Tour event in the professional racing season is the Santos Tour Down Under. And this year saw Simon Gerrans from Australia take his third ochre winner's jersey in the final general classification of the Santos Tour Down Under, winning it in 19 hours, 57 minutes, and 35 seconds. Oh, by the way, you know, we're used to the yellow jersey in France, even the golden jersey of the Tour of California. I had to look up ochre. Now, according to what I found on the internet, ochre is an earthy pigment containing ferric oxide, typically with clay, varying from light yellow to brown or red. So that's the leader's jersey in the Santos Tour Down Under. Now, second place in this year's Tour Down Under went to Cadel Evans, just 1 second behind Gerrans. And a nice comeback for Evans, who struggled in the 2013 season. And there's a lot of talk that we should be looking for great things from Cadel Evans in the 2014 season as he races for Team BNC. Third place went to Diego Ulisi from Italy on the Lamprey Merida team, 5 seconds back. And of course, if you haven't heard the news, Ulisi will be joined on the Lamprey Merida this team this year by none other than 2013 Vuelta winner Chris Horner. Horner signing very, very late. The 42-year-old finally getting a ride in the 2014 season. Rounding out the top 10, Richie Porte, Nathan Haas, Robert Hessink, Daryl Impey, Garrett Thomas, Adam Hansen, and Igor Celin. So as a result of the 2014 Tour Down Under being over, well, of course, the UCI had to release the World Tour rankings for the year. And of course, it reads exactly like the top 10 that I just read. Of course, Simon Gerrans atop the standings, then Cadel Evans, then Diego Ulisi, and on down through the top 10 that we discussed. Obviously, we can expect some changes in the overall rankings throughout the year, but it's nice to see the year beginning. And of course, with a new UCI president, I'm crossing my fingers as I say this, I'm hoping for a good, clean year of racing in the Pro Tour. And with the start of the World Tour season, apparently it is not too early to start talking about that spectacle of July, the Tour de France. Tour de France's organizers and owners, the Amaury Sports Organization, or ASO, announcing earlier this week that for the first time, the Tour de France will feature women not just on the podium, putting winners' jerseys and handing lions and flowers to winners, but also on July 27th, 2014, women professional racers will be racing on the Champs-Élysées. As we've seen in events such as the Tour of California before, what the organizers are doing is providing the women with one stage, and this one will take place on the last day of the tour, to race professionally in the Tour de France as part of the spectacle of Le Tour on the Champs-Élysées before the men come through on the very same day. Now, you may recall in the past there were various attempts at a women's Tour de France. Remember the Tour Féminine? The last time that was staged was in 2009. But this year, you may also recall that during the Tour de France, a petition was circulated by none other, by a number of people, but it included none other than world champion Marianne Vos and also Olympian Emma Pooley of Britain. Now, Tour director Christian Prudhomme was quoted in the Associated Press as saying that he didn't think it was very appropriate that they circulated a petition during the tour. I happen to think he's wrong. What better time and place to get a little bit of attention for their petition? But he then was quoted as saying, quote, after the tour in September, October, a delegation of women's champions came to see me, led by Marianne Vos. What they asked us was for a bit of spotlight. They insisted upon the fact that women's cycling does not get enough media coverage, and only this event, and only organization ASO, could help them get more coverage for their race. Tour organizers put out a statement by Marianne Vos saying that she was delighted to hear about this event, saying, quote, I'm particularly happy to take part, especially thinking about the majestic finish on the Champs-Élysées. The birth of this race is a revolutionary development in our sport. The Tour is the pinnacle of professional racing, and this could open up a new era for women's cycling, unquote. It's a great development, one I'm looking forward to. As I mentioned on the spokesman earlier this weekend, however, my concern is, will it get the TV coverage that it deserves, or will it simply be maybe a 5, 10, 15 second afterthought of coverage where Phil and Paul simply say, yes, and the women raced, and here were the winners. I'm hoping that this event does get the coverage it deserves, and that hopefully this starts to catapult women's cycling more into the forefront of the racing scene around the world. As I mentioned a few moments ago, the UCI does indeed have a new president in Brian Cookson, Pat McQuaid being ousted in an election late in 2013. The UCI president announced earlier in January that the UCI has set up a three-person independent panel to investigate cycling's doping past, including allegations that the UCI somehow was connected with the activities of Lance Armstrong and his associates, as alleged in a variety of different places. Indications are that the panel will consider asking Armstrong himself to testify, as well as former UCI heads Hein Verbruggen and Pat McQuaid. The three-person commission will be chaired by Dick Marti. He's a Swiss politician and a former state prosecutor. Also on the panel are Peter Nicholson, who is a former Australian military officer and, get this, a war crimes investigator, and also German anti-doping expert Ulrich Haas. Now, if Haas's name sounds familiar, that's because he is a former judge at the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and he was also the arbitrator in Alberto Contador's fight against the allegations that he doped during the 2010 Tour de France. Brian Cookson, the president of the UCI, has said that the UCI will pay the entire cost associated with the commission, but that the commission will operate, and this is a quote, completely independently of the UCI, unquote, and it is said that they are going to get no orders, no instructions from the UCI other than to perform a complete investigation of everything that happened during the 1990s and 2000s as concerns doping and any possible collusion between athletes and the major international body. The panel itself will be based in Lausanne, Switzerland, and it will be known henceforth by the name Cycling Independent Reform Commission. According to the UCI, Brian Cookson has directed that they complete their investigation sometime in 2014. I, for one, am looking forward to hearing what they find out and whether we can finally set the record completely straight on this part, this dark part of cycling's history. Meanwhile, Cookson has hinted at the fact that there is every possibility that if Lance Armstrong provides helpful testimony and cooperates with the new commission, that there is every possibility that the UCI could work with USADA and WADA to try to reduce Lance Armstrong's lifetime ban. The Associated Press quoted Cookson saying, quote, "There will be the possibility of a reduction," unquote, in the ban if he provides helpful information. However, it's unclear whether or not the UCI actually has the power to reduce the sentence since he was sanctioned by the United States Anti-Doping Agency. The Associated Press, again quoting Cookson, "It all depends on what information Lance has and what he's able to reveal. Actually, that's not going to be in my hands. He's been sanctioned by USADA." Continuing, quote, "They would have to agree to any reduction in his sanction based on the validity and the strength of the information that he provided. If they're happy, if WADA are happy, then I will be happy," unquote. Lots going on in the world of doping. Lance Armstrong still in the news of professional cycling. It's going to be an interesting year. And with that, that's going to wrap this week's episode of the Fredcast. Before we go, I do want to thank our show sponsors, starting with, of course, Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Remember, go to Jensen USA anytime you need anything for your cycling lifestyle, and that's where you're going to find a great selection of products at incredible prices with unparalleled customer service. And don't forget, Fazari Bicycles at Fazari.com. At Fazari, you get custom, quality, direct. And it is a sweet ride. That's Fazari.com. And finally, if you want to learn anything about business or about software, a whole variety of subjects, thousands of videos are at your disposal at lynda.com. Simply go to lynda.com/Fredcast and get a 7-day free trial just for being a Fredcast listener. And of course, thank you for your support of the Fredcast through your donations. Simply go to thefredcast.com and click that donation link. If you'd like to keep up with the Fredcast and know everything that's going on, don't forget to check out our website. That's where you can also find the show notes that I've talked about several times on today's show. Of course, the website is www.thefredcast.com. If you'd like, you may send us an email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Or you can follow along on Twitter. Twitter handle is Fredcast. Or join our Facebook page at facebook.com/thefredcast. If you'd like to send in a voicemail, please do so. You can use our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Or use our SpeakPipe page simply by going to thefredcast.com and clicking on that link on the right-hand side of the page. Or if you have the capability, record it on your own on your computer or phone and send it to us in an email. We love hearing from you, especially love getting your voicemails, especially those we can play right here on the show. And with that, there's just one more thing left to do on today's show, and that's bring you our Pod Safe Cycling Music, something we've been doing for a long time and will continue to do. And this week's Pod Safe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com. IndoorCyclingMusic.com is the home of the free weekly featured track, premium members content of weekly 30 and 60-minute cardio mixes, and monthly 90-minute cardio mixes to get the world moving. This week's track is called Down at McDonald's, double Z like Fazari, by the artist Electric Six. It is great to be with you here in 2014. Expect a lot more content from the Fredcast this year. So thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. And thank you for telling your friends about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Fredcast, but between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.